Although Al-Qaeda was badly damaged in the aftermath of the September 11th attacks, two things are certain. First, even if the organization does not survive combat in Afghanistan and the ongoing worldwide manhunt, some group or groups with the same ideology will follow it. Second, the United States will continue to be the prime target. Bin Laden's popularity is remarkable. The Arab street exulted in the September 11th attacks and acclaimed him a hero in the mold of Saladin. The mood was encapsulated by Radwa Abdallah, a university student who, sitting in a McDonald's in Cairo, told a Wall Street Journal reporter that when she heard about the carnage at the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, everyone celebrated. People honked in the streets, cheering that finally America got what it truly deserved. Public opinion in Saudi Arabia, where polling is difficult to conduct because political self-expression can be dangerous, matched the Egyptian reaction to the attacks in one survey, where 94% of the respondents applauded bin Laden's actions. There is no doubt that jihadi fish swim in friendly waters. Only a few of Al-Qaeda's leaders have been killed or captured. Close to 100 lesser lights have been arrested, which is impressive given the group's covert nature. But since intelligence services have only a vague idea how big Al-Qaeda is, there is no way of knowing how much of the infrastructure has actually been dismantled. At least 7 mid-level operatives, bin Laden associates who know where the sleeper cells are and have the authority to activate them and the logistical and planning skills to equip and guide them, are unaccounted for. All of them have been implicated in previous conspiracies, including the attacks of September 11th. A few have been with bin Laden for nearly 10 years. Since they can turn the crank on operations, the fact that they are at large means Al-Qaeda is not yet crippled. Of the group's U.S. network, nothing is known. The FBI believes that the September 11th ring acted without help from cells already in the country, but it cannot prove a negative. There may well have been sleepers who provided logistical help. It would be more prudent to assume the existence of Al-Qaeda infrastructure that has not yet been detected than to assume the Atta group was so self-disciplined and resourceful that they carried off the conspiracy with no local assistance, an extraordinary feat, if true. The group was able to relocate some of its cadres to Pakistan, and some, it appears, to Iran. Others remain in Afghanistan and will either try to elude foreign forces or cross the border into Pakistan. Most of the prisoners taken from Afghanistan to the U.S. military detention center at Guantanamo Bay seem not to have been connected to Al-Qaeda's overseas networks and have so far yielded few valuable clues to the identity and whereabouts of key players. For the foreseeable future, Al-Qaeda will not have the benefits of the state sponsorship it enjoyed in Afghanistan. It remains to be seen whether the group will reappear in Yemen, where bin Laden had strong links and the government's writ ends at the city limits of Sana'a, leaving large tracts available for secure resettlement. There are other possibilities. Somalia, or the bin Laden-affiliated Palestinian refugee camps in Sidon and Tripoli. A more salient question is whether Al-Qaeda will make the leap from bricks-and-mortar statehood to virtual statehood. In Afghanistan, Al-Qaeda was in truth a state. It controlled territory, maintained an army, and waged war, forged alliances, taxed and spent, and enforced a system of law. The de facto sovereignty it enjoyed in Afghanistan offered great advantages: a territorial base, training facilities, and a secure headquarters. But given the possibility that the United States would do in Yemen, Somalia, or Lebanon what it did in Afghanistan, virtual sovereignty holds fewer hazards than reestablishing the camps and training facilities where they will attract the terminal guidance sensors of American bombs. Virtuality has its own advantages. A dispersed group is harder to locate and attack. Some elements will inevitably be identified and arrested, but other parts of the network will not be affected. With their Macintosh laptops and encrypted communications, stolen credit cards, access to internet cafes and disposable cell phones, false passports, and comfort with long-distance travel, jihadists can be everywhere and anywhere. With businesses and charities as fronts, they have adequate cover for their money transfers, fax transmissions, and shipments of materiel. To move large sums of money, they can avoid the banking system by using hawala money movers or couriers. Able to move quickly over long distances, the centers of individual networks can relocate under pressure or to keep adversaries off balance. Networks, supple, malleable, invisible, have the advantage over hierarchical organizations like law enforcement and intelligence agencies. A virtual enemy is nimble. Moreover, networks can swarm. Their well-developed communications enable them to come together for short periods to launch an offensive, then disperse. It is not only anti-globalization protesters who can use the net effectively to coordinate the arrival of large numbers at the same place at the same time. If Al-Qaeda or its successor makes this transition, the danger it poses will be vastly greater.